Hi, I'd like to welcome you back to session two of our course, Living from a Place of Surrender. In the original session, we actually went a lot deeper than you may think in understanding surrender. And yet, I tried to never use the word. I told you originally, I'm not going to define surrender for you. I'm going to show you how it happens. You will understand it completely when we're done. What we did in the previous session was to let you realize that you're in there. You know you're in there. You've always known you're in there, but we don't focus on it. We focus on what's happening in there instead of the fact that we're in there. We focus on what we call the objects instead of the subject. So what we did was go through a couple of little examples, tests, experiments, if you will, similar to, if I remind you, that you looked in the mirror at various times throughout your life, and what you saw was what your body looked like at that time. And I asked you a very simple question, was it you who looked? And every one of you said yes, because it was, all right? Likewise, we played around with your gender, right? That your body has a gender. You notice it. You certainly notice your body has a gender, but who are you? Believe it or not, that is actually the start of understanding surrender. You actually, if you were willing to take that journey with me and intuitively admit that you are in there, and that you have noticed these things throughout your life, you have surrendered some of your attachment to form. You've surrendered some of your attachment to the body. You've surrendered some of your attachment to your sense of identity, right? That I identify myself as a 34-year-old woman or a 50-year-old man. That's what we do. We identify. That's not who we are, all right? It's called an identification. We are projecting our sense of self onto something that is not ourselves, such as the body. I showed you the dramatic change that your body went through when I played the little operation with you, all right? You were still there, you were the same, but you noticed the change your body went through. So surrender is very subtle. It's not about renunciation. It's not about surrendering the world or surrendering my career or surrendering my family. It's not about surrendering to somebody. It is about coming back to a place of absolute truth. But in order to do so, you have to let go of falsehood. You have to let go of what has not been true. That is actually what surrender is. It is the act of letting go what is not true. If you do that, you will end up with what is true. So that's why I discussed with you this concept of seeking truth or seeking self, right, is silly. You know, who's seeking self? Self, right? So it's not a matter of seeking. It's a matter of surrendering or letting go of what was not true. It is not true that you are your thoughts. It is not true that you are what you see in the mirror. You are looking in the mirror. You know that the object, the reflection in the mirror is not you. You're willing to admit that. But even that which is reflecting in the mirror is not you. You are the one that is looking at this. So our starting position for session two is that you have come to the realization, newsflash, I'm in here. And I asked you, what's it like in there? And what you told me, I did it for you because I'm your speech person for now, I'm representing humanity, is it's not always so nice in there. It can get tumultuous in here. It can be nice in here, but it can go through many different stages. And so we quieted down for a moment, and I asked you, what are you experiencing when you're in there? And again, I helped you with it because I've been doing this for many years, is first, I experience the world. There is a world out there. It comes in through my senses, and I experience it. I am the consciousness, the awareness of being inside, and I am very aware that there is this moment in front of me. I'm also aware that the moment can stimulate thoughts. We'll discuss that later. I'm also aware that quite often, the combination of the thoughts and what is coming in through the outside world has this effect called emotions that gets stirred up inside. In this session, we're going to start to question, what exactly is it that you're experiencing? And you said to me, well, I'm experiencing the world. What is that? What is in front of you? What is the experience of this moment that exists in front of you? To shock you, because I said I like to teach through shock therapy, right? I'm going to make a statement, and then we'll talk about it. The moment in front of you right now, just look at the moment in front of you. Don't do anything with it. I'm not asking you to meditate on it or, you know, be positive about it, right? Just notice there's a moment in front of you. Do you know that that moment has nothing to do with you? That moment has absolutely nothing to do with you. It belongs to itself. You didn't make it. You're not going to make it come. You're not going to make it go. It's just there. It happens to be where you're looking at this moment. And people take offense to that. I'm telling you, I'll do it another way. That moment is completely impersonal. It has nothing to do with you. It has to do with itself. And we'll talk about it in detail in a moment. To prove that to you, I have a couple of different examples. One is this. Is that the only moment that exists in the universe, the one that's in front of you? You say, well, that's ridiculous. Of course not. There's a moment to the right of me. There's a moment to the left of me. There's a moment ahead, above me, below me. And there's moments in China. And there's moments on Jupiter. There is literally a moment going on everywheres in Einstein's time-space continuum. There is just a moment going on everywheres in the universe right now, isn't it? Right? What do those moments have to do with you? You are so willing to say nothing. What does the rings of Jupiter have to do with you? What is what's going on in the sandstorm of Mars have to do with you? Or the big tornado or hurricane, whatever it is, that storm on Jupiter, what's it got to do with you? You look at me like I'm crazy. It has nothing to do with me. That if every other moment in the universe has nothing to do with you, how does the moment in front of you have something to do with you? I don't get it, right? So in other words, if you look to the right, then that moment has to do with you. But the one you told me had to do with you a moment ago is not there anymore. Of course not. I couldn't care less about it. Something's fishy about this. There's something weird, as you got to admit, all right? There's something going on here that is weird. And what you will realize, and I hope you will by the time we end this session, and certainly by the end of the course, is that moment out there is no different than any other moment in creation. Anyone else isn't looking at it. They couldn't care one iota about it. It's not bothering them. It's not stirring up their thoughts. It's not stirring up their emotions, right? Nor does that moment do that to you when you look to the right. Then all of a sudden, the moment to your right does. Why is she sitting there? Who's she talking to? Oh my God, the lights are bright, right? All of a sudden, it all starts affecting you because you're looking at it. But the truth of the matter is the moment existed exactly the same before you looked at it. It's the most beautiful, amazing, mind-blowing thing to realize. This is not personal, guys, all right? There's just a moment unfolding in front of you that is exactly the same as every other moment in the universe. I mean, of course, it's not a twin. It's not exactly the same in terms of its form or manifestation, but your relationship to it is exactly the same. So once you start to realize this, you realize, boy, it doesn't look like that in the real world. It looks like every moment I'm experiencing is the most important thing that ever happened. All right? It's like, this is my life, right? It is no different than the moments you are not experiencing. It is just what's happening. I use the example sometimes. You go out to Fisherman's Wharf, beautiful Pacific Ocean in San Francisco, and you look out there, and I ask you, what do you see? And you say, the ocean. Well, that's ridiculous. The ocean's big. You can't see the ocean. What you see is the part of the ocean that you see. That's all. And you will see waves and you'll see spray and you may see some whales or some sea lions, okay? That just happens to be what is unfolding in that part of the universe at that moment in front of you. There are billions of other things going on at the same moment. That moment has nothing to do with you, but that's not how it seems. And that's going to be the most important thing that we talk about. And just to, again, give you a little preview, that's what surrender is. I'll keep touching it, but don't worry about it. We'll get there. What is surrender? Releasing ignorance, not finding truth. That moment has nothing to do with you, but you don't live like that. To say the least, you don't live like that. You care a lot about the moment that's in front of you. That's hilarious, all right? So as we talk about this stuff and as we come to understand this stuff, you are going to find that naturally, you get a little more detached, a little more openness about the fact that it's not as personal as you thought it was. And when we get to talk about mind, you're going to find out that that's the culprit, right? That's what makes it seem so personal. But the reality is that the universe is filled billions and trillions of moments that are happening simultaneously, and there is something going on in every one of those moments. Your consciousness, you in there, just happened to be seeing one of them. Whoopee. That's what it boils down to, all right? In order to learn depth and truth, you need to be able to honor that whoopee. You need to be able to honor the truth that I have not been living the truth, all right? I've been living what we call ignorance. I don't mean ignorance as an insult. The true word ignorance means ignoring something. You're basically personalizing something that is impersonal. Another way to look at this, which is very, very helpful, is to question, where did it come from? There's a moment in front of me. I didn't put it there. I like to think I'm in charge of it, right? But I think you've caught on by now that you're not, all right? It is unfolding and you're going to experience it. I loved when I spent the time many years ago, and I do it regularly, I try to keep up with it reasonably, to understand, where did that moment actually come from? I know I think it's my moment. Where did that moment come from? So the right place to find out where the moment, remember, throughout this discussion, I'm not talking abstract. I'm talking about the moment in front of you. Where did the moment in front of you come from? Well, the right way to figure that out is to go to our scientists. This is something that back from Aristotle, from Plato, from the beginning of time, humankind has asked, where'd that come from, all right? Where'd the stars come from? Where'd this rock come from? Where'd that person, what made all of this? Where did it all come from? What is it? So if we go to our scientists today, which we should have great respect for, by the way, they have found out so much that is going to blow your mind, right? We've spent a lot of money from the beginning of time paying off our scientists to go out there and figure out what's really out there. I know what I'm experiencing. What I'm experiencing seems to be good and bad and right and wrong. I'm scared and, oh my God, all right? I'm experiencing something very personal, but that's not what's out there. What's out there is what? So to start at a reasonable beginning, which I know you all understand, is the scientists will tell you that what you are actually looking at when you look out there is an averaging. Your eye is averaging, your senses are averaging molecular structures. There are just molecules out there that are bound together and you are seeing them. I talked the other day when we had our discussion in session one that you're not actually looking at the outside world. It's coming in. Well, I left out something I wanted to talk to you about, is what about color? When you look at that world, I look at it, it appears to have color. Do you know the world has no color? Do you know that? That items, molecules, objects have no color, zero, there is no color. The only color that you're experiencing is, as I told you, light is bouncing off the object and coming in and stimulating your optical sensors and passing through your optical nerves. That light, as you know, you've seen it in eighth grade science, is a prism. If you shine light through a prism, you will get different colors. It's called the electromagnetic light spectrum. So you get this light spectrum. It is because different molecular structures and different atoms, different molecular structures, absorb some of the frequencies of light and others reflect the frequencies of light. It bounces off of them. The frequency of light that is bouncing off the molecule is the one that hits your eyes. The ones that make it through or absorb don't come back. That's what you see as color. You see the light spectrum, the exact same thing when you look through a prism. It is that that has color. So objects don't have color. Isn't it neat to talk about the truth, right? Ye shall know the truth and the truth will set you free. So the first thing the scientists tell you is when you look out there, what you are seeing is a combination of atoms. That the element that they used to think was the beginning atom meant the smallest possible unit, that the atom was the unit. Every one of you understand what an atom is, a nucleus of protons and neutrons, and then an electron in shells around that. And this becomes the basic unit of what you are looking at. I could stop right now and have fun with you and say, when you look outside and say you like something, you don't like something, I like the color of the wall, give me a break. That's like saying I like part of the electromagnetic spectrum and not other parts. You start to question, where did all this come from? And so you see objects outside and I like this thing, I don't like that thing. I remember the first time I made myself do that, I say, so you really like some atoms and not others. It gets a little weird, right? Because that's all you're looking at is a bunch of atoms, all right? So the scientists have come back and said, it's all atoms. All it is structures. When the atoms get pulled together through the laws of covalent bonds, and it's really electromagnetic laws again, which atoms will bond with which atoms and stay together to create molecules. That's what you're looking out there. It's not personal. It has nothing to do with you. You don't decide what it puts together. You don't decide how it bonds together. So when you look at that, scientists have come back and said that there are, I think it's 92 natural elements. That's what your periodic table is. Those of you who studied chemistry, I wish they'd started teaching it to you this way, where you understood what you're studying. The only thing you're studying in chemistry is which of these atoms will bond together naturally and which I can make bond together if I force it. But in the natural order of things, there are the first 92 elements on a periodic table, I think almost all but two of those are naturally found in the universe. You will, not just on Earth, but stars, Jupiter, everywhere are made out of these basic elements. So most of you have studied this sort of thing. To me, if I understand that everything I'm looking at is just accumulation of these mass amounts of atoms being put together, then I understand that the whole personal thing I'm doing of getting all upset about this stuff and it's freaking me out, right? It's like, that's weird. Because when I look at a periodic table, it doesn't freak me out. There is, I don't have anything going about any of that stuff. But then it gets really interesting. And you start to ask the question, because I know you're very inquisitive, where'd the atoms come from? That, if you understand where the atoms come from, you really start to get a sense of your place in the universe, that your consciousness is looking at this form that has manifested outside. I've already shown you it has nothing to do with you. When we get down to this level, you really see it has nothing to do with you. So I've had fun asking people throughout my years, do you understand where atoms come from? And I get this blank stare that very few people understand where the universe actually came from. So we're not doing this so that we learn science, although I feel that every one of you should have a basic understanding of what you're so interested in that's in front of you, where it came from, all right? So this is truly a spiritual discussion, not a scientific one. So basically what you're going to find, if you put your head into this, if you study this, but I'll make it easy for you, is that scientists, almost all scientists, Russian, Chinese, American, doesn't matter, right? At this point, they all have a basic understanding that what took place is about 13.8 billion years ago, and they have no idea why, there was this giant explosion. It's called the Big Bang. And the universe prior to that, and again, this is not theory, wait till you see how much they actually know, the universe prior to that, all of it, all the galaxies, every single thing, all the mass and matter of the universe fit into a space the size of an atom. This is scientists talking, not weird spiritual people, all right? The entire universe fit in a space the size of an atom. And then what happened is there was this giant explosion, so big that we can't even talk about it. And that, I can't call it matter, it wasn't matter yet or mass, that substance started expanding out. And it was so hot, it didn't have any form in any way, shape, or form. It was just white, hot plasma. It couldn't start to build any structures because it was moving so fast. It was so hot, and it just started expanding out at the speeds of light after the explosion. What happened after about, I think it was like 300,000 years, it had expanded out enough, just this, it's just, they call it a plasma. A plasma has no form, there's no matter, there's no elements. It's just formless, okay? It's just absolutely formless. It expanded out fast enough and far enough to where it started to cool down. As it cooled down enough, you could start to have some forces take effect. And the force that took effect is that electrons that were part of the parcel of this plasma, started to be able to be attracted to protons and neutrons. And you started to get some interaction due to the electromagnetic force. And your first atoms were created out of that plasma as it slowed down. How did they get created? Because the electromagnetic properties of positive and negative, the protons were positive, the electrons were negative, and these pieces started to get pulled together because of the attraction of negative and positive, and electrons started to form circles, shells, around the nucleus, which was the protons and neutrons. And the first atoms were created within a half a million years of the Big Bang. All right? And again, I will talk to this as if this is what the science are saying. Before I'm done, I'll show you that when your TV show called The Big Bang Theory, it's not a theory anymore. That even though it seems incomprehensible that we would know something that happened a half a million years after the Big Bang, 13.8 billion years ago, we do. And that's really fascinating. So they've really proven that the Big Bang is what actually happened and that all of it was created this way. This is not just conjecture or theory. So basically what happened is after about, I think it's like 380,000 years or something, it started cooling down enough to where hydrogen got formed. And that is the beginning of the first structure of what you see as the universe, which is the hydrogen atoms got formed by these electrons spinning around the nucleus, which is protons and neutrons. And you just had nothing but masses and masses of hydrogen and a little bit of helium, but I'm not going to try and do it exact, so let's just call it hydrogen, all right? Just total hydrogen atoms. Well, as it slowed down enough, right, all of a sudden, photons, which are light, were able to escape this mass. Like, it's funny, the Bible says, in the beginning, darkness was upon the earth. That's exactly right. In those beginning moments, no light could escape the plasma. The plasma was so thick that photons couldn't get out. It wasn't until it started cooling down and the hydrogen atoms started getting formed that then the photons could escape this plasma. And all of a sudden, God said, let there be light. And there was light, all right? It is amazing if you go back, I won't do it all the way through, and read Genesis with an open mind, all right? You'll see a lot of the same structure, okay? So basically, at that point, we have nothing but hydrogen atoms. So there's the beginning of what we see as the periodic table. All right, fine. Where'd the rest come from? It is amazing. I just, to this day, it amazes me. So what happened is as it expands out and slows down more, another force, so far we've only talked about the electromagnetic force that was able to pull electrons around the neutrons and protons. The other force in the universe, under fundamental force, these are fundamental forces, starts to have its effect, which is gravity. Gravity, of course, will pull things together. That's the effect gravity has. So the nucleus has mass, and it starts to pull other things together to it, other hydrogen atoms to it. It's just not, it's not electromagnetic force. In fact, it has to overcome the electromagnetic force. Since electrons are all negative, when they try to pull the hydrogen atoms together, they will repel, all right? But gravity becomes strong enough little by little as things start to join together, they get more and more mass, therefore more and more gravity. And at some point, the gravity pulls the hydrogen atoms together enough to where they fuse. We're used to nuclear fission, which is how we do atomic bombs, which is we bombard the nucleus so it breaks, and then all this power is released. This is all done through nuclear fusion, which means it's fusion. They fuse together. The nuclei of the hydrogen atoms, it's not hard because there's only one electron, so it's such an easy element to work with, they get pulled together until they mush together. And so the protons, the one proton and one neutron that was in the hydrogen atom, with another hydrogen atom, all of a sudden become two protons and two neutrons in the nucleus, and you just made helium. And I'm telling you, as amazing as it sounds, this is how the universe is created. This is how every single thing you interact with every day was created. So now we have gravity pulling the hydrogen atoms together to form helium, and that's happening all over the place through the universe. This process, it takes a long time, hundreds of millions of years or whatever, starts to pull these together, and what happens every single time that there is a fusion of the nuclei, there is a release of atomic energy. Just like when we split the atom, there's a release of atomic energy, Einstein's equals mc squared. So when you fuse, there is no longer the need for that energy to hold together individually, and a lot of energy is released. So all of a sudden, there's these explosions that are taking place, right? This release of radiant, powerful energy. And that's the birth of what we call the first stars. The primary stars. That's where a star comes from, is the fusing of this hydrogen together, leaving helium, which is its byproduct, all right? But just it's constantly hydrogen that's fusing, then helium is like the ash. They call helium the ash of the process, all right? It's the leftover nuclear waste, all right? That's what it is. After all this stuff gets pulled together, but it is the pulling together, the fusing together of the hydrogen atoms causes the stars to start burning. So wherever these gases were thickest, because, you know, when gas expands, it's not going to all be the same. So the hydrogen clouds were thicker in some places. Therefore, the gravity was stronger. Therefore, the first primary stars started to burn. And so what that literally is where the stars come from. So that's kind of neat. Okay? That's every star you look at to this day, that's where it comes from. And I'll take a little side talk here, because I told you this is not theory of what happened 13.8 billion years ago. Why? Stars are being born right now. When you look up, you can have binoculars that are strong enough to see the Orion Nebula, all right? And you hold your up there and you see these gases with a star shining inside. Those nebula, like the Horsehead Nebula, those beautiful pictures you see with all those colors and so on, those are nurseries for stars. That is literally what they are. Stars are being born inside those gases, because the exact same process that happened 13.8 billion years ago when the first stars were created, new stars are being born by those hydrogen gases, which is mostly what you have in those nebula. Hydrogen gases are being pulled together and reigniting stars, and new stars are being born. So we know this is the process that happened. Fine. So far we've done great. We went from nothing, all right, and just showed all we need is an explosion, and we can start to pull these pieces together. So we now have hydrogen and helium and stars. Well, what happened? Where did the rest come from? What happens is, if there's enough mass, first I want to tell you this. This is the life of a star, how it takes place. The hydrogen keeps burning, keeps fusing, leaving a core, what they call the core of the star, is helium, because that's what's left over. And it's heavier, therefore gravity pulls it together, and the hydrogen is able to float up. What happens when it runs out of hydrogen? What happens when a star starts to die, when it runs out of what is burning? And this is happening all the time too. You'll see when I mention some of the words. So the core of helium is pulled together more and more, and it can't burn, because that's the whole key here, is the gravitational force, unless the star is really, really big, and the early ones were not, the gravitational force is not strong enough to fuse helium. It was only able to fuse hydrogen. So therefore, the hydrogen starts to float away from the solid core, and it starts to expand out. It's still burning, right? But it's expanding out because it can't burn at the core, all right? It doesn't have the same gravitational pull. So gravity is pulling on the helium, and the hydrogen floats out, and the star starts to expand. And I know you've heard this, that someday your sun, don't worry, it's 5 billion years from now, someday your sun will start expanding and will become what's called a red giant. All right, which come in different sizes. Ours is not an enormous one. Our star is like an average size, but it will start to expand out and will swallow the Earth. But I told you, don't worry. You have enough things to worry about. Okay, it'll be a very long time. So that's when you hear different types of stars. So that's a red giant star, is the helium, excuse me, the hydrogen that's left is expanding out. The core is helium. And at some point, there won't be enough explosion to fight the gravity. That's what's happening. Gravity's pulling it in. The force of the explosion, the radiation, is pulling it out, right? It's not centrifugal force in gravity. It's the explosive force of radiation, the radiant force exploding out, all right? At some point, there's not enough hydrogen, and it's pulled far enough away to where finally the core of helium will pull the star together and collapse, and all the leftover hydrogen didn't burn will float out and create nebulae, which will create new stars. And so that's the cycle of the universe is going on. But at that, and then what you will be left with is what's called a white dwarf. So far we have a normal star that's burning, we have a red giant that burns, you have a white dwarf. What is a white dwarf? There are different types, but this type is called a helium white dwarf. There's nothing but a helium mass that's been pulled together, and that's the core, and that will float through the universe as a star. But where do the rest of the elements come from? We have more than just hydrogen and helium. What happens is, if the gravitational pull is strong enough, if the star, the core of the hydrogen cloud that got pulled into the star, became a star, was big enough, then when it gets to the point that the helium core is releasing the hydrogen, all right, the force of gravity can actually start to fuse the helium together. And all of a sudden, helium becomes, I think it's carbon. All right, so it goes from hydrogen, helium, and then when helium core starts to fuse together, it makes mostly carbon. It will make some of the in-between elements, and then it goes hydrogen, helium, lithium, beryllium, boron, carbon, each one of those gets created as a byproduct, but the real core becomes carbon. Well, you all know you're made of carbon. So again, I don't want this to be some abstract discussion, right? In fact, well, we'll go a little bit further, right? You know that mostly your water, what the human body's what, 68% water or something like that, right? And then carbon is what we call the building block of life, right? This is where it got built, right? God didn't create carbon. If he did it this way, right? You can see, how do you bring God into this? Well, where did the Big Bang come from? What was there before the Big Bang, right? You still have plenty of room. And what an intelligent person sees is not that this displaces creation, right? This is how it was created, all right? Eventually, you're going to see that the stars are the furnaces that God used to create the universe. He created every single atom. We're going to go a little bit further, but I'll make the statement. Every single atom you interact with was created in the stars. That's where they came from. And right now, it's making more of them. They are just like in Pittsburgh, we have the steel furnaces that are so hot, and we're creating steel, right? The materials that we built our buildings with, right? The stars are the furnaces that are building, creating the atoms that became what we interact with. Every single thing you interact with came that way. So what happens, to get the rest of the periodic table, make a long, very long story short, is if the star was big enough to start with, so that the pressure of gravity is strong enough, then what will happen is helium will start fusing. And when the helium starts fusing, it creates carbon. And so now you get a carbon core with a ring of helium still burning and a ring of oxygen, hydrogen is still burning. So now you have a bigger red giant when it starts to die, and they get bigger and bigger. If the star is even bigger, then the carbon is pulled together and becomes oxygen. And then they pull together to lift it to silicon, I think, is next. All right. Eventually, it keeps creating what we call the lighter elements, which is up to 26. From 1 to 26 are considered lighter elements. What's 26? Iron. Iron is very special in our universe. Why? Because iron, is how the scientists say it, iron, when it fuses, absorbs more heat than it releases. So now when it fuses, it doesn't give off enough heat to expand the star. So therefore, an iron core will always collapse. The minute it gets to iron, right, there is not enough energy to continue a process of fusing and keep the star burning. The star will die when it gets to iron, all right? But notice, up to that point, we've created all 26 elements. It's exciting, okay? It's like, that's where your nose came from, right? That's where every single atom that you interact with was baked in the stars, all right? But now we've got a big star that got to iron. It had to be big to start with, and it created all these elements in between, right? And finally, the core became iron, and it can't fuse it together. What happens now is just the most amazing thing in the world, all right? So what happens is all these other elements, remember, every ring that was up to that point, there's always some residual, so it's still burning in further and further rings. So it expands out and expands out until it can't burn enough. Enough radiance can't burn to keep it out, and it collapses. That collapse is so powerful on these big stars that the power of it collapsing, that when it hits the iron core, it starts fusing all the rest of the elements. So it's not that gravity was able to do it by itself, but the collapse of the star. At that collapse, it lets off so much energy that it's called a supernova. That's what a supernova is when the star collapsed. Our sun won't do it, I don't believe. It's not big enough, all right? Has to be, in fact, I know it won't. I studied that, right? It has to be at least like 8 to 10 times the mass of our star to create a supernova. So it will collapse down, and the power of that collapse will crush, this is neat, listen, it will crush the iron core until it fuses together, but it can't fuse in a normal way. So what happens? The electrons get pushed all the way down, collapsed to right up to the nucleus, all right? Right up to next to the nucleus until there's no space left between the nucleus and the electrons. But there has to be some. There's a principle that says two electrons can't occupy the same place, but it gets pushed down until they're all that close together, and that's called nuclear mass. That's got pushed down to nuclear mass, okay? It just pushed down to that level, all right? And actually, we have to go further, right? When a really big star collapses, right? That's how a normal star collapses. It goes down and the electrons get pushed down. You have a very, very dense object, okay? In fact, I think the white dwarf I didn't mention, they said if you took a teaspoon of a white dwarf's material and you brought it down to Earth, it would weigh 2 tons. Something like that, all right, in that kind of neighborhood, all right, it's tremendous. Now I'm talking about a supernova. When it explodes out and collapses down, its power is greater than what we call this exclusion principle, where electrons can't be in the same place, and it crushes the electrons into the nucleus of the atom. So all of a sudden, you broke the nuclear wall, the electrons get pushed in. Well, electrons are negative, protons are positive. Neutrons are negative, or neutral, right? So what happens is the electrons merge with the protons because they get pulled together and create neutrons. So now there's nothing but neutrons, and it creates what's called a neutron star. That's what it is. There's nothing left of the core, right? There's no electrons. There's no nuclear wall. There's just a mass of neutrons all smooshed together. You see how dense that is, okay? That's what leaves a neutron star. What's left over after a star that collapses that's 8 to 10 times our size, right, is a neutron star. That if you bring a teaspoon of a neutron star down to Earth, right, it will weigh 12 trillion pounds. So this thing is an anomaly. It's a phenomenal thing. And they're floating out there. Einstein predicted them, and they have found them. They have found neutron stars. But that's during that collapse of a supernova is when all of the higher elements get created. So just to bring this down to home for you, your wedding ring may be gold. You may have a gold tooth. You may like gold. You have a gold necklace. I am telling you that's where it came from. There is no gold anywhere that did not get created in a supernova. Pretty neat, all right? Because it doesn't have the power to merge together to get past iron. But once you get past iron, you go from 27 to 92, that scientists will tell you every one of those elements were only in a supernova. Okay, that's pretty neat. So now you come down and say, what if the star is even bigger? And then we'll stop with this. We'll move on right with your life. What if the star is even bigger? If the star is 20 to 25 times the mass of our sun, it all does what I said, expands out into a giant red giant and then can't sustain itself because it stops burning enough and collapses down and crushes the electrons into the nucleus and crushes them past the nuclear wall. It all becomes protons, right? And then it breaks the neutrons until they're no longer. Neutrons are made of, you're getting out of quantum physics now. They're made of quarks and leptons and that sort of stuff. It breaks them apart until there is no matter left, and it becomes so dense at that point, down to all the mass gets pulled down to not nuclear mass, right, and not neutron, but nothing, just the basic quantum elements, and the gravitational force is so strong of what's left, right, that light can't escape it. That, forget what it weighs on Earth, you can't even come close, all right, but light passing by that, it's just a point now, that it went down to it's called singularity. It crushes down to singularity, right? They can't talk about it as anything, right? And that point has such a gravitational force that if a photon of light passes by, it gets sucked in, and that's a black hole. That's where your black holes come from, all right? So you just explained all of cosmology and all, right? And so when these stars explode after a supernova, not only did it pull down and create the pulsars and the neutron stars and the, black holes, right? But all of the matter that hadn't burned yet, remember I said carbon and oxygen and then silicon, all the different stages of rings got blown out into space. And that's where all the elements come from. They exploded and got blown out into interstellar space as clouds. So gold, every single thing is now floating around. And of course, the rest is easy, right? Gravity, some of them are denser. Gravity begins to pull them together. That is where the planet Earth was made. That is, it's generation after generation of this continuously happening. So now you have gold and silicon and lithium and hydrogen and oxygen all pulled together and creating this planet you live on, okay? It's pretty amazing, isn't it? Okay? So when they say we're all made of stardust, every single thing, let me bring it back. I said to you, we started this discussion by saying in front of you, there's a moment. What is it? Where'd it come from? I just told you. You have to understand that. Don't let use your mind for something meaningful. Your moment in front of you came from those stars. It was baked together. Then the Earth got pulled together into this mass, all right? And of course, we have a star burning, and just that's where all the planets, everything. That's where it all came from, all right? Then what happened? You know what happened. Now you're dealing with what you studied in science, okay? The chemistry of what was left by these molecules, these elements that are on Earth began to pull together, and you start getting the cosmic, you know, primordial soup, all right? And you start pulling these things together. And, you know, the truth of the matter is, since I'm giving this lecture, this talk, life itself, right, which you're now discussing is form. Where did form come from? I haven't said where you came from. This is very important, by the way. Okay, this is the whole thing. We can explain all day where what you're looking at came from. I don't explain where you came from. You're always looking at it, okay? So we in our spiritual teachings, right, teach, and you will come to realize it not by studying the outside, but by exploring the inside, is that you have nothing to do with that. You are the, remember I talked about the flashlight shining on something? You are consciousness that is illuminating what you're looking at. I'm just talking about what you're looking at. I'm not talking about who you are or where you came from, okay? So what happens is form gets created and life lives in it, right? And life starts evolving and you have the whole Darwinian thing. None of this stuff is against God. That's the saddest thing in the whole world. This is how God created the heavens and earth. Okay, if a painter takes paints and a paintbrush and an easel and a canvas and paints, you don't say the painter didn't paint it because they somewhere got the easel and the paintbrush and these are the elements of how creation was taking place. It should give you more respect for creation, not less, all right? The fact that you can explain this phenomenal thing that took place and look what it ended up in. I'm telling you, just look in front of you. That's where it came from. All right, so then it evolves out and you get the entire planet and trees and different vegetation and animals and blah, blah, blah. All right, and you end up with what's here. You end up with what's sitting in front of you. The question I have, I hope you found the journey interesting, is what's that got to do with you? Were you around causing any of this to happen? Then how do you think you're going to make it be where you want it to be? I'm going to be a scientist with you. Every single thing I talked about held to the laws of cause and effect. Scientists teach there are four fundamental forces, only four in the entire universe. I'm not making you be scientists, but I'm saying you could understand what I just talked about, so now you're more able to understand truth. I don't want it to be that you memorize science. I want it to be that you understand, boy, if I got this wrong, that in front of me took 13.8 billion years to get there. How's that? Every single moment in front of you took 13.8 billion years of every single thing happening exactly like it did to get in front of you. Is that true or not? All right? If your great-great-great-grandma didn't meet great-great-great-grandpa, you ain't here. Do you understand that? Okay? And I always like to tell the story how they met. Okay? Because I know your great-great-great-great-grandmother. All right? Right? So how they met. Okay? They were in Indian tribes, all right, in Central Florida. You know, Seminoles or whatever they are, okay? And I'm going to go further back. I like this one, all right? There was a dinosaur walking around in the area that's now Florida back in the early days, and there was a flood. It rained really, really hard, and it was a big dinosaur, and it put its big footprint down into the mud, and it caused this imprint to take place in the mud, all right? And it kind of stayed there imprinted, and the rainwater started to flow into the imprint. And little by little, it eroded the rest of the earth because that's what happens. It's the laws, right? Following the same laws. And it built this. And eventually, it became Lake Okeechobee. It's down south here, right? Right? And it became a lake. And because the lake was there, early Indians started to settle around the lake. And because early Indians settled around the lake, one day it was raining, a long time after the dinosaur, right? And your grandfather was in some sort of a saloon that they had built down there. I was getting ready to have a drink, and your poor great-great-great-great-grandmother, right, was trying to get out of the rain and went in, and it was love at first sight. So in other words, if the dinosaur didn't walk there, and if, you got it? It ain't happening. Every single thing is the result of every single thing that ever happened, all right? You're not the doer. You've heard that spiritually, okay? This is the silliest thing I ever heard of, to think, yes, I understand, Mickey. It took 13.8 billion years for this moment to get here, and every single thing had to happen exactly the way it did. I don't like it. Okay, I think that's funny. Now you see why I talk to you about this stuff. That's surrender, right there. Not surrender the world. Do you really think, what if I asked you a question? Is it okay with you that Jupiter has rings? That Saturn has rings? You're going to look at me like, no, thank you. You're looking at me like, what's it got to do with me? That's crazy. How about everything's that way? Every single thing is exactly that way. It has nothing to do with you. It has to do with the forces that cause it to be the way it is. And those forces stretch back 13.8 billion years ago, don't they? All right? That is surrender. What? The feeling you felt if you dared to hear that. It's this openness, this, whoa, what am I doing? You're letting go of the part of you that is not living the truth. And when we get to mind, you'll understand that part very well. But at this point, all we're doing is admitting that, I've done it two different ways now, there is a moment in front of you, unquestionably. It is no different than the moments that are not in front of you. So what are you making such a mishigas, is a nice Yiddish word, making such a mess out of the moment that's in front of you, all right? All right, and the second one, we just trace the moment in front of you of all the forces that caused it to be. I started telling you, if you want to understand, it's good to understand the scientists. It is not even hard. You can't tell me that was hard, that discussion we just had. You now understand where every element on the periodic table came from. If I had my way, at home I do, by the way. I have a periodic table in a very holy space in my house. Why? And I bow my head every time I see it. Why wouldn't you? Look where it came from. OMG. Right? So like, wow, pranam. Right? That's pretty magic stuff. You came from the stars. You're nuclear. Oh my God, I can't even talk about it. All right? That's all. And like, it was neat that there really is a stage in which I believe it's carbon becomes oxygen, oxygen becomes silicon. Right? Now, silicon? I'm a computer guy. Silicon is what the chips are made out of. That's where you came from. You got baked. Imagine if the star knew when it was making silicon through fusion that it would become a thinking machine. And that's what they would use to make the silicon chips. Wow. Pretty neat. And like I said, the one I really want you to do is gold. Boy, gold's really special. You're darn right, special. It took a supernova to make it. Right? It's neat stuff. So basically, you come to the point where you realize, and that's the whole purpose of this discussion, all right, is the moment in front of you is a very holy thing. It's a very special thing. Right? I started telling you these four forces. It got created by four forces. That's all there's been from the beginning of time. That's what's amazing. The scientists are telling, even quantum physicists, and all are saying there's only four forces that created and are holding together the universe. Well, you can learn four. That's not so complicated. I thought it was harder than that. What are they? Electromagnetism, you know, positive, negative. the laws of the electromagnetic field. That's one force, electromagnetism. Two, gravity. Well, you all understand that, all right, at least the basic force. Three, what they call the strong nuclear force. And four is the weak nuclear force. That sounds like, oh, that's too hard, heavy for me. No, it's not, all right? Do you want to know, right? Basically, in the core, this is just basic understanding, so you get some idea of the strong and weak nuclear force. In the core of the nucleus of an atom, what did you say was there? Protons and neutrons. What charge are the neutrons? None. They're neutral. That's why they're called neutrons, right? And what is the charge of a proton? Positive. What do positives do to each other? They repel. How does the nucleus stay together? How can the nucleus stay together? It's a whole bunch of positive things repelling each other. Oh, there must be another force stronger than that. Let's call it the strong nuclear force. I swear to God, that's the strong nuclear force. The force that is strong enough to offset the tremendously powerful repulsion of the electromagnetic force and hold the nucleus together. All right? That's what that is, all right? What's the weak nuclear force? There must be some force that is happening, very weak, it doesn't happen that often, that radioactive materials are falling apart. The strong force and everything is not strong enough to hold it all together. So under some conditions, there's a force that causes some of this to decay, all right? That's the weak nuclear force. You now understand from a quantum physics point of view, from what we call the standard model, the only forces that are necessary to create the entire universe: electromagnetic force, gravity, strong nuclear, and weak nuclear. Pretty neat, isn't it? Okay, you're smarter than you thought you were, all right? But I know it's fun to talk about. That's not why I'm talking about it. I'm talking about it from a spiritual point of view. I love that you now understand the science is spiritual. Science is spiritual. Our scientists are our priests. Our scientists that are teaching us about God. They're teaching about how creation got created. They don't believe in God. I don't care. It doesn't make any difference to me. What they are doing is teaching me how my beloved, the creator of the universe, created the universe. All right? And how I can respect that every moment before me is worthy of respect. Slow down. Here's where it gets spiritual, right? How do I now, as a spiritual person who understands all of this and imbibed it, ingrained it into my being, deal with the moment in front of me? Are you kidding me? It's like, Pranam, wow, look where you came from. It took 13.8 billion years for you to get here, and it took 13.8 billion years for me to get in front of you. You want to talk about a match made in heaven, right? That's the most amazing thing in the whole world. Nobody else is experiencing what I'm experiencing, are they? Nobody else is standing here experiencing exactly what I'm experiencing, right? Do you want to know what? No one ever did. I got all these cameras in front of me and stuff, right? They weren't here before, right? No one ever experienced this. Guess what? No one ever will. No one has ever or ever will experience the moment you are now experiencing. Is that right or wrong? It's never going to repeat itself. No one's going to be sitting in the same spot. Nothing. It just keeps passing through time and space. Therefore, you are being given a unique show that took 13.8 billion years to create. There's the producer, all right, to produce, and it's in front of you, and you're complaining. Now, I know you think you have a reason to complain. My intention is to take that reason away. To me, the awesomeness of what is standing in front of you and where it came and the specialness is that it was given to you. It's like a gift that God, creation, gave to you to say, here, darling, here's a moment for you to experience. I'm in here, the experiencer. I don't want to just nothing, all right? The whole universe is empty, but I get to see this. There's shapes, there's colors, there's sounds, there's people, there's things to do. It's amazing, but that's not what we do, is it? That's why these talks about cosmology and about quantum physics are spiritual. Do you understand that? Because they are taking away from you the right to make them personal when they're not personal. There's not a single thing I talked about that was personal, right? You weren't even around, okay? And this is what created everything. It's just moving through time and space, but your consciousness is separate from it. Your consciousness is what is the flashlight that's shining on the moment that's in front of you. That's what you're dealing with. That's what your consciousness is doing. So basically, you have this wonderful opportunity to understand creation. That's why sometimes I have students come here and say, oh, I'm so interested in yoga and I want to meditate all the time. Or I want to do this. I'm not interested in my schoolwork. Well, then you're missing the whole thing, right? You're being given this opportunity that someone's paying or some, however it happens, right? That you have this opportunity to stand before, hopefully, very intelligent professors and people who know what they're talking about, who just feed you all this knowledge about what's going on out there. It's a wonderful thing. Same thing when you go to work. We talked about this earlier, all right? If you go to work, what an amazing thing. I'm here in this universe, me, inside the consciousness, and there's this moment unfolding in front of me. And it asks something of me. It asks me to put a widget on top of a thing, all right? It asks me to take somebody's temperature. It asks me to move a camera. It gave me a job to do. Wow, not only did it come and manifest in front of me, it actually asked me to participate in the dance that's taking place, all right? Ramdas wrote a book called once, The Only Dance There Is. That's it, okay? this is what's going on. It is not about you liking it or not liking it. Where in the world did like or dislike come from? All right, we're going to talk about it next. Right? That's what's going to be in the next session. You will have no question in your mind about where those things came from. But the important point of all this is truth. Your mind, I'll let you use your mind. You can't deny a single thing I just talked about. This is where it came from. And then it presents itself to you. You didn't write a menu and decide what it's going to be. Nobody ever asked you whether you want carbon to turn into oxygen or you want iron not to be able to fuse together. It's nothing to do with you. But that's what's in front of you. And you start talking about like your body. It's hard for me to even talk, right? It's not your body. Right? It's not your body. Make a liver. That's not your baby. Sit there and say, I made this baby. You did not make the baby. I'll tell you what, go in the back room and make me an eyeball. I'm waiting. Make me an eyeball. All right, let's just do that. We'll start to wind down here, right? You know you can't. You don't even know what it is. You don't even know where the spleen is or where the pineal gland is or pineal gland is or where anything. You know what the hypothalamus does. Well, your baby's got one. If you don't even know about it, how'd you make it? You didn't make it. It made itself, didn't it? It made itself. Inside of you, it made itself. All right, well, how did that happen? Well, now we're getting really quiet. Well, my understanding is that there's this molecule. What's a molecule? A chemical structure of elements put together. What elements? The ones that were baked in the stars. That's the only elements there are, okay? And it put itself together into this spiral form, double hexaspiral, whatever the heck it is, right? And we call it DNA, all right? Well, what is that? It's something that you didn't make. It's something Einstein didn't make. It's something Albert Schweitzer didn't make. It's something that what made life? Because that's all we've talked about so far, isn't it? How life made itself, correct? The same forces that fused together and lit the stars and created the elements, when they sat around here on Earth long enough, because of the different laws, pulled themselves together and created a molecule that is able to make a baby. Now that's ridiculous, all right? In other words, literally, I'm not gonna do it in a Petri dish because it's too weird, but imagine a Petri dish sitting there with a cell that has DNA in it, okay? And start putting bananas and donuts and Twinkies on top of it and watch it turn those elements, that's all they are, elements, watch it magically turn those elements into eyeballs and livers and kidneys. OMG, are you kidding me? That's what's happening. It's literally taking elements that have nothing to do with it, rearranging them like a chemist. Where's the chemist? You understand that, right? It's mind-boggling, which is what it's supposed to be, if you are willing to look at the truth. Okay, we have some land out here. So we have some fields that I lease out to the university for them to do some farming. And they grew some corn. And so we got to watch the cycle. That they just went in there, tilled the soil a little bit, and dropped these tiny little seeds, little teeny things. They dropped them in there, okay? And all of a sudden, corn stalks started coming up. And then big corn stalks, right? I know we do it all the time. We see it all the time. We just don't pay attention. This is part of being conscious. Where'd that come from? What? The corn stalk. If I asked you that, well, this is a big corn stalk. It got corn on it. Where did it come from? I didn't see anybody make it. I didn't see anything happen. And you're telling me that that seed that you dropped in there had the DNA, the intelligence, right, to take soil, water, and sunshine and turn it into a corn stalk. Stop for a minute. Literally turn dirt, water, and sunlight into a corn stalk. That is literally what is happening, isn't it? And that corn stalk's a lot bigger than that seed, isn't it? This is awesome. Where did that come from, that intelligence, that power? From a strictly scientific point of view, which is fine, right? It came from the stars. It came from those four fundamental forces pulling chemistry together in a way that is what ended up being here. My main question is, what has that got to do with you? What has that got to do with you? Oh, here's some corn. That's not conscious at all, right? Why is there corn? Because I'm hungry. No, give me a break. You're missing something here. There's quorum because of everything we talked about, right? Imagine if you kept your head there. Do you want to know that what we just talked about is yoga? You all think of yoga as your asanas, right? There are five branches of yoga, right? One of them is called jnana yoga. That's what we just did. Jnana yoga is the yoga of wisdom. What does that mean? It means you put inside your head something other than what I like and what I don't like. And why does she say that to me? And oh my gosh, she's walking over there. And I don't like the way my face looks and my nose is too big. And what are you doing? Why are you using your mind for that? You use your mind for truth. That's what wisdom is. You use your mind to contemplate higher things than the personal, right? Didn't we just do that? Isn't it liberating to realize there's nothing wrong with your car? Oh, there's a scratch on my new car. Oh, really? Okay, let's get down to pretty picayune compared to where'd the metal come from that made you, oh my God. All right, just trace it all back. A wise person, instead of thinking about themselves incessantly and constantly, which again, we're gonna do that in the next session when we get to mind, how that all happened. Why do we live in ignorance like that? I can explain it to you. We'll get there. But first I wanted to explain what's really going on. And what's really going on is pretty awesome, isn't it? Right? You don't need money for that to be going on. Right? The Buddha said, can't buy me love, you know, can't buy me liberation, can't buy me joy, can't buy me anything. The truth is, the truth itself is the highest thing that could possibly exist. And ye shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. But we just dealt some serious truth, didn't we? And I like the truth we dealt with, every scientist agrees with. You understand that? So basically, on your everyday life, how does this affect you in your everyday life? That's what people say. Are you kidding me? This is what it does to your everyday life. If you will pay attention to this and have it cause respect, I mean deep respect, for every moment that's unfolding in front of you, for realizing the honor that you have to see that it took 13.8 billion years of everything being exactly the way it was for that moment to come in front of you, you will feel joy every moment of your life. You will feel what I hope you're feeling now, a sense of relief, a sense of openness, all right? Isn't that what you're trying to buy with your money? Isn't that why people do drugs? Isn't that why you need to go on a vacation somewhere, right? Because you want to feel, we talked about before, how you doing in there? Not so good, right? How you doing in there if you marry truth? Great. How much did it cost? Nothing. There is always a moment unfolding in front of you. Dig it. Pay attention to it. Remember where it came from. Transcend the personal aspect. Why? Because it's not personal. You understand? So now we end up with a world, it's so perfect, it's ridiculous. Right? We have plants. We were talking about corn stalks. Well, it needs water. Where does it get water? There's no irrigation system out there. Where does that corn stalk get water? That's a whole thing. Just blow your mind to even talk about. Well, you know, the elements of hydrogen and oxygen came together and created the ocean. Well, the ocean's over there. I'm over here. I'm landlocked. Where did I get water? Well, it created an irrigation system. I didn't pay for an irrigation system. No. It created an irrigation system. Well, what does an irrigation system do? It takes a source of water and distributes it to a place where there wasn't water. Oh, you mean the sun shines, the star. I don't call it the sun, I call it a star. The star shines, and because of the laws, right? Only those four principles, right? It evaporates and it pulls the molecules up into clouds and then the wind blows them across and then they drop down. It's irrigating. Does that really happen? All right? Then that's why it rains. Stop complaining. You hear me? Oh, you do. Oh, it's raining. I have to get up. You just change your entire attitude about what is going on. The difference is this attitude is founded on truth. The attitude you're dealing with is just something weird. And it ruins everything. You understand that? If it blows your mind that on the planet Earth, water falls out of the sky, right? Then rain is exciting. It's all exciting. Every bit of it's exciting. That should be your starting point. So I told you what we're going to do is we're going to first center you back in the fact that you're in there. You're the one, the experiencer. You're the ones having the experience. Then we're going to talk about what are you experiencing. And one thing you're experiencing is there's a world out here. I hope you have a little more respect for it right now. That's a pretty awesome thing out there, isn't it? That moment in front of you is pretty special. You might want to pay attention to it. It's really, really special. And then we're going to deal with mind, which is the other thing you experience, and emotions, which is the other thing you experience. And each layer, I'm hoping you're willing to let go. Let go of what? Let go of life? No, I told you to embrace life. I told you to fully embrace the moment in front of you. It's a gift. Oh my God, don't renounce it. What are you, crazy, right? It took 13.8 billion years to get here and you want to renounce it? It's crazy, right? What you need to do is accept and honor and respect the amazing thing that has been given to you this moment. And that's the essence of being in the present moment. That's the essence of be here now. But look, it's not that you're forcing yourself to do it. It's a natural state because you're not hanging out with a part of you that doesn't do it. Right? That's what mindfulness is to me. Mindfulness is not that you force yourself to be present in the current moment. Mindfulness is that you sit there and understand, why am I not? It's like this amazing moment is unfolding in front of me. I'm here experiencing it, and I'm busy not being here. Right? Instead of being here now and being there then, or something like that. Okay? So you learn that the natural process, believe me, everything we're talking about is surrender. The natural process is you let go of the part of you that was keeping you out of the moment, not you force willfully being present in the moment on top of the part that's keeping you out of it. So we just covered an entire segment of what's keeping you out of it. You seem to think that the moment in front of you has to be a certain way to be okay. I think it's pretty awesome the way it is. I think it's amazing that it even exists, isn't it? All right, so from now on, everywhere you look, everything you interact with, the first thing you do is say thank you. The first thing you do is pay tribute to the stars. Hey, stars are not just romantic little twinkly things. Darling, all right? The stars are the furnaces of the universe that are creating everything for you, that gave you everything. Can you say thank you? Can you appreciate it and understand you don't deserve anything? You didn't do anything. You don't even know where you came from. You're just here, and that goes for everybody. You're just in here experiencing this amazing gift that was unfolded in front of you. Very good. So we're making progress on living from a place of surrender. That's exactly what we just talked about, isn't it? That's a place of surrender. All right. I look forward to meeting you over in session 3.